Airbnb.
I hosted on Airbnb 9 years ago for the first time, but I'm doing it again this year because I got a trip to France in the summer and a trip to the tropics over Christmas.
All right, Jack, besides those humble brags, both of those trips, what are you going to do with your place, man? What are you doing with it?
For both of those trips, I'm putting my place on Airbnb.
Because now there's an obvious benefit to hosting on Airbnb. It's financial.
I'm putting the money from my Airbnb revenue towards my plane tickets for both of those flights.
All right, so it's incredible. Instead of your place just sitting empty while you're on vacation, you're going to earn a little extra money while you're away. It's a win-win.
Truly. And setting my schedule as a host on Airbnb is so convenient. Airbnb has easy-to-use features that allow me to update my calendar, so I host exactly when I want to host.
Yeah, Eddie's, if you live somewhere you already have an Airbnb, Airbnb it.
Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. This podcast is supported by FedEx.
FedEx offers picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday.
See the FedEx service guide for delivery information.
FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business.
Absolutely. Positively. FedEx. Sponsorship for this show comes from SoFi Invest. Alternative investments are now available on SoFi. Unlock the potential to build and protect your wealth with alts, including real estate, venture capital, pre-IPO unicorns, and more at SoFi.com/tboy.
Alternative investment funds have unique risks, including the risk of loss, may charge high fees, can be illiquid, and aren't suitable for all investors. Investors should carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, expenses, and important information contained in a fund's prospectus prior to investing. SoFi Securities LLC, member FINRA, SIPC.
This is Nick.
This is Jack.
And this is Snacks Daily. It is Friday, October 23rd.
Nick?
Yep.
It's the end of the week, and it happens to be the best one of the week.
It is a TBOY. First story, Jack. What do we got over there?
Quibi has announced it shutting itself down in a Quibi or two.
Already got the autopsy report, Jack. Do we have a prognosis, or is it a diagnosis? We're making a prognosis.
I think it's a cause of death.
There's going to be an osis involved. Second story, Jack. What's involved?
Goldman Sachs' bad trip to Malaysia a bunch of years ago.
Yep.
Feels like it was the hangover part four for Goldman.
They're stuck with a bill for $5 billion and huge implications for the entire financial industry.
For our third and final story, you buy Bitcoin, bro?
Your crypto buddy Steve, is probably named Steve, is calling you this week about the Main Street moment over at Bitcoin, courtesy of Venmo.
This is Jack, my buddy Nick. Owns a Bitcoin.
His name is Ben. He hasn't done much till recently.
But Snackers, before we hit those three great stories, the biggest change to your refrigerator in the 21st century is about to happen.
Get this. Jack and I noticed that Coca-Cola is shutting down 200 of its drink brands.
Sliced bread is nothing compared to the half of Coke-owned beverages that will disappear next year.
Jack, I don't know. We got to whiteboard this thing. What are we going to call this? We got to call it like the great clean out.
The silent spill.
How about the epic evaporation?
Coca-Cola actually calls these brands that it's killing their zombie brands.
Yeah, that's their term, zombie brands, because the brands aren't growing. They're just lingering. They're hanging out on shelves. It's kind of creepy, to be honest.
Last month, we updated you that Coke executed a couple of zombie brands, Odwalla and Zika.
We're talking the OG brands of smoothies and coconut water. Sad to see these guys go, Jack.
We thought Odwalla and Zika is where the pain would end.
But we were so wrong. It is a bloodbath out there over in the hydration category. Dasani, Powerade, Vitamin Water. They're all getting silently spilled, some of their latest variations.
Coca-Cola, for some reason, owns like 13 different Dasani brands. So they're going to get rid of a bunch of them.
Jack, would you like this Dasani now with extra water? But here's the crazy thing about these zombie brands, all 200 of them. They're just 2% of Coca-Cola's total beverage sales.
So you gotta ask, why didn't this happen sooner?
Jack, you know, I assume it's kind of tough to pick your favorite kids, but honestly, Coca-Cola is kind of choosing their favorite child right now.
The golden boy right now is Topo Chico Hard Seltzer and anything with the word hard in it.
Anything hard seltzer just got upped its allowance. And here are the car keys. Go have a fun weekend. Don't even bother calling mom and dad.
Coconut smoothie, on the other hand?
Nope. Go to your room. Never come out. We don't want to see you again. And can you do the hard seltzer's homework for them?
Give your sister your Game Boy. Your PS2 privileges are revoked.
Zombie brands are done. Let's hit our three stories.
You're tuned in to Snacks Daily. Spoke to the lawyers and we gotta get something legal out the way. For Snacks bitch about the hair ain't food, it's ear candy. They don't reflect the views of the Robin Hood family. It's all informational, just so you know. We're not recommending any securities.
Nope.
It's not a research report or investment advice. Not an offer or sale of a security.
Right.
Snacks is digestible. Business news for you. Robin Hood Financial, LLC. Member FINRA /SIPC.
For our first story, Quibi is sadly shutting down after just 6 months. In about the length of a single Quibi episode, Quibi is now no more.
Quibi,
short for Quick Bite, sounds like a flavor of gummy. Jack, break it down. What is the Quibi? As a reminder to the snackers, they were offering HBO quality content chopped into quick bites for people with short attention spans. We're talking mobile only, $5 or $8 a month. Jack's already using the past tense. He's already getting ahead of the game. Now, they called it HBO quality content. We're thinking it was Hulu quality content at best.
Yep, but still was mobile only, and you were forbidden. Couldn't even ask. Don't even think about putting this on your TV.
And it was designed for in-between moments. Each episode was like 8 to 10 minutes.
You're on the subway commute. You're between 42nd and 59th Street. You're going to pop in an episode. Maybe you're waiting in line in the grocery store.
And the who of this story is the one that got all the attention, because we're talking Jeffrey Katzenberg, the guy who invented the Shrek.
He was teaming up with Meg Whitman of HP quality fame. You can thank your printer for her.
She also was the first CEO of eBay, I think. And also, it's not the Shrek. It's just Shrek. My bad on that.
It could be the Shrek. It could be a verb at this point. But together, this pair raised $2 billion. $2 billion. A quarter of a Lyft before Quibi had even launched.
That's right. There was no Quibi in the App Store, and they already had $2 billion almost from investors.
So Quibi launches in April of this year, goes with the extremely absurdly generous 3-month free trial. No, please have another sample. And then we got the numbers.
Yeah, so Quibi's like bragging about 3.5 million subscribers, but they were free subscribers. It was in July,
yep,
that we saw who really wanted to stick with Quibi.
A data processing firm let us know that it turns out 90% of all those users from the first 3 months, they ended up quitting as soon as they had to pay for the first time.
Full disclosure, I'm one of those Quibi people who defected when I actually had to pay for it.
Jack, I gotta come clean here. I am also one of those defectors of July.
Nick, I watched one episode and it was okay. I just wasn't compelled to ever return to the app.
I hear you. The Jennifer Lopez giving away a lot of money. I got through 2 episodes. It was charming, but I didn't end up becoming a hardcore.
Seems though, Nick's and my experiences wasn't atypical. Because in September, we heard rumblings that Jeffrey Katzenberg was going to LA and like trying to sell the company.
Katzenberg pulled up in the Uber Black, went to Apple, went to Disney, went to Facebook, went to NBC, and all of them passed on buying Quibi's content last month.
Which brings us to last night. After Nick and I just finished the Snags Daily recording that came out yesterday.
It was a great recording. That was a great one.
We see news that Quibi posted an open letter saying what's going on with their future.
The main note of this letter, Quibi is calling it quits.
They're not trying to merge anymore. They're not trying to sell to another company. They're going to shut down the app.
They are. They've got $350 million left, and very nobly, they're actually going to return that money to shareholders, which is a great move.
They're not going to like pull an Adam Newman and like host a company party on Hawaii for a month.
Vegas, Quibi team, ASAP.
In the letter announcing that they're shutting down, Jeffrey Katzenberg and Meg Whitman gave two big reasons for the failure of Quibi.
The first issue was timing, and the second issue was the idea itself.
All right, let's address case number one, timing. And look, it launched on April 6th, 2020, mid-early pandemic.
Yeah, you're not on that 4 train going from 42nd to 59th Street, and you're not having the in-between moments where you're waiting for a friend at the restaurant, probably Timmy, running late.
People were sitting at home streaming, and the usage on mobile video apps peaked to a record high during the pandemic. It just wasn't Quibi.
Yeah, there was actually more consumption and demand for content than there's probably ever been in history.
All right, now another timing issue with Quibi. They had lots of competition. They jumped into the market just as Apple TV Plus, Peacock, and HBO Max were launching too.
But as Jack and I have mentioned in a takeaway on Quibi many moons ago, the real competition for them wasn't other streaming apps, it was social media apps.
Snapchat just had one of their best quarters ever during the pandemic. You don't hear them complaining about timing.
No, oh, and TikTok wasn't really a thing last year, kind of a thing this year, even though you're at home.
Once again, we think the real competition for Quibi was social media apps, which are doing really well.
But as for Meg and Jeff's second point about the idea not being strong enough, feels like we should address that one with Jack. What's the takeaway for our buddies over at Quibi?
Quibi's idea did make sense. Its execution didn't make sense.
Snackers, content is still king, and Meg Whitman and Jeff Katzenberg did market it as HBO quality content,
which it kind of wasn't.
Exhibit A, the show about a lady obsessed with a golden arm. Did you hear your buddies saying you got to watch that on Quibi next?
Checked it out. It's got the lady from Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, who's fantastic and kind of a B-weight role for her, where she has a golden arm that she's obsessed with.
The show didn't catch on. And it actually turns out, according to reports, many of the shows that made it to Quibi, they were leftovers that Netflix and HBO had passed on.
But the other key that Jack and I have noticed is that Quibi was so focused on mobile only that it actually became an anti-social app.
Screenshotting of the Quibi app was banned.
No.
There were no social buttons to share with your friends.
You can't do it.
And even when you were sitting at home for the whole month of April, you weren't allowed to cast what was on your phone to your huge TV that was sitting right in front of you.
Oh, and by the way, if you open the app, there were no memes, no trending hashtags, and no TikTok-style discovery to find out what other shows you should watch.
The last sentence of Quibi's obituary on Snacks Daily. Quality mobile-first streaming video was an idea that made sense.
Those mistakes, they didn't. For our second story, Goldman Sachs just admitted to bribery in a huge scandal in Malaysia.
And unlike in the 08 financial crisis, the individuals responsible are being punished too.
We got to travel back to the early 2010s. Jack and I were working in the banking industry in Manhattan at banks, wearing ties, having to shave every day out of peer pressure.
Little did we know, over in Malaysia, the government was asking big-time investors for money to fund economic development projects.
Yeah, so Goldman Sachs came to the rescue here with, you know, just a casual classic investment banking service.
A whole bunch of analysts were working until 4 a.m. and they said, hey, Malaysia, we can structure for you a $6.5 billion bond issuance.
Now, those analysts have probably grown up into associates now. And if you are one of them, we'd love to know what the go-to seamless meal at 3 a.m. was when you ordered it.
Basically, Goldman says, we will convince huge money managers to buy your bonds for $6.5 billion because you're going to pay them back with interest, Malaysia. Like, that's how we're going to convince them.
Yeah, that's how this is going to work. Now, Jack and I don't know the exact fee that Goldman charged, but based on our experience, we're going to estimate it was like probably a 1% kind of fee.
Yeah, and a 1% fee sounds small, but a 1% fee on a $6.5 billion amount, that's a $65 million gift for Goldman Sachs.
Ding, ding, ding. Very nice when bonus season comes around, except one problem that arose a few years later.
That fund wasn't interested in economic development at all.
Not building parks over in Kuala Lumpur anytime soon.
Turns out the Malaysian officials, one in particular, who's still an international fugitive, by the way.
Maybe a snacker? We don't know. Could be listening somewhere else.
He pocketed a whole bunch of that money that was supposed to help build the country.
Turned out this was a huge fraud scheme and wealthy Malaysians frustratingly embezzled a whole lot of funds.
Now, since those Goldman analysts had whipped up the whole deal on a whiteboard,
yep,
a bunch of government lawyers got to work and were like, hey, Goldman, what did you know about this fraud scheme?
And so since 2018, 10 law enforcement agencies have pressed charges against Goldman Sachs for all this.
The United States, the UK, Singapore, Hong Kong, Malaysia. This is the Olympics of lawsuits.
And now presenting the legal team of Japan
to issue the final closing affidavit.
Yesterday, this all came to a raveling conclusion when Goldman Sachs admitted to guilt of anti-bribery laws.
Translation here, the $65 million or so in fees it pocketed, those were basically bribes from the Malaysian officials for arranging the scheme and to stay quiet.
So Goldman just announced that it will pay up $5.3 billion in fines, wiping away a whopping 8 months. Get this, 8 months of Goldman Sachs' profits.
Goldman announced yesterday it's paying half a lift in fines for something it did in Malaysia like 5 or 6 years ago.
Kind of a big number, $5.5 billion. You're wondering how the stock did. This is bad, but investors were completely ready for the pain, apparently.
Public companies like Goldman Sachs and any other company with a stock that's tradable, they must inform investors as early as they can about big things that could affect the stock price.
Well, interestingly, we noticed that Goldman told us back in August to expect a roughly $5 billion price tag to resolve this scandal.
And yesterday we learned it was $5.3 billion, pretty close.
So the stock ended up rising a bit yesterday because the fine was already baked in. It's like you're going for your flu shot and they don't say, don't worry, this will kind of hurt. They say, this is really going to hurt.
You were ready for the pain. You were already crying.
Nothing better than a pre-cry. So Jack, what's the takeaway for our buddies over at Goldman?
We've reached a new era in financial crime.
Yes, we have.
Individual wrongdoers are finally being held responsible.
Snackers, big bank, does bad thing, pays huge fine. You've heard it a dozen times. You've seen it on a dozen newspapers.
But here's where this story with Goldman Sachs gets interesting. individual Goldman employees. They're getting in trouble too.
Jack and I have literally never heard of this before. The bad guys, they tend to just get away in these situations.
But the two key Goldman dealmakers who structured this deal, one has already pled guilty to money laundering and bribery, and the other is being charged for money laundering and bribery with a trial coming soon.
They're even telling the ex-CEO of Goldman, you're going to have to come back to 200 West Street and we're going to need you to sign a few papers and bring a check.
Yeah, pretty much the top five positions at Goldman, the current CEO, CFO, COO, all that, and the former CEO, CFO, all that, they're all paying back bonuses.
So the 2008 financial crisis and its handling, it's taught us a few lessons.
Without personal liability, unethical behavior at companies probably won't stop.
And if a dirty deal makes executives money, they could lose it years later.
Good to see those lessons be put into place here.
For our third and final story, PayPal is going to start letting users buy and sell and get this, pay in cryptocurrencies on Venmo.
Separate but definitely related story. Bitcoin's having its biggest week of 2020.
Jack, brings us back to like a few years ago. Remember you'd be like walking around the office and getting completely unsolicited advice from everybody on buying Bitcoin?
Late 2017, it was insane. My brother's like, Jack, a guy at work made $10,000 on Bitcoin in a week. Should I buy, Jack? And I'm like,
you'd hear a noise on like 18th Street and it was someone who's like, I'm leaving, I'm quitting, I bought six of them.
Yeah, Bitcoin was insane back then, and it feels kind of like 2017 crypto land all over again.
Yeah, first funny thing, Jack, and I noticed this week, the Bahamas just launched its first ever national digital currency. Good for them.
It's actually been called the Bahamian Sand Dollar.
Great name. Sounds like a good Halloween costume, by the way. But yesterday, the other big thing we noticed, Bitcoin just passed $13,000 for the first time in 3 years.
What's driving the news, we think, is that PayPal will let users buy, sell, hold, and pay in cryptocurrency soon.
Even though Bitcoin hasn't really done much in the last year, this is a mainstream moment, we're thinking, for Bitcoin because 350 million PayPal users worldwide are actively using PayPal.
The population of the United States is soon going to have access to crypto super easy because of PayPal.
So Snackers, here's how this goes down. You can go to like paypal.com right now and join a wait list. And pretty soon, they said, before the end of the year, you'll be able to access this service.
Tacos at Tacombi and Nolita, pay with Bitcoin.
You're doing a shopping binge over at Bloomingdale's, you could end up paying with Bitcoin.
You're up in Seattle and it starts raining and got no raincoat, pay for your raincoat at REI with Bitcoin.
By next year, they're going to have 26 million stores you'll be able to pay for Bitcoin at.
So with any Bitcoin paying situation, you got to talk about the logistics.
I know what you're thinking, Jack, because it's never as pretty as it sounds.
So if I got Bitcoin and I'm soaked and I need that raincoat, I can pay REI my Bitcoin, but REI is going to get dollars because PayPal is going to handle the conversion from Bitcoin to dollar.
Jack, I think you're going to look fantastic in that raincoat. Second of all, I want to point out, it's going to cost you a little bit more than just that final price.
PayPal isn't UNICEF, so they're going to charge for this. In fact, for any transaction under $100 worth of Bitcoin, you'll pay a 2.3% fee.
Just like with everything with Bitcoin, it's a little bit more complicated once you get into the actual Bitcoin.
But the calendar day everyone circled is when Bitcoin is coming to Venmo in early 2021.
That's the real mainstream moment, because then you can have brunch with Becky, send her 1/1000th of Bitcoin for that shakshuka, or as my friend Jack likes to call it, Middle Eastern huevos rancheros.
I'm a big fan. I'd never seen it until Nick ordered it in New York City that one day.
It's a wonderful thing, although you burn yourself. Inevitably, you burn yourself.
So Jack, what's the takeaway for our buddies over at PayPal and Bitcoin? Crypto needs a chaperone, a trustworthy person who can get everyone to chill out a little bit.
Right now, Snackers, Bitcoin has basically just been a speculative investment.
It is mostly bought by investors hoping that it jumps in value so that they can sell it for a return.
But it could also completely fall, and a lot of people have been really badly burned on cryptocurrencies.
Crypto is big on the crypto right now.
Yes.
Not so much on the currency part of cryptocurrency.
Perfectly put, Jack, because Bitcoin hasn't become a true currency for paying for things, basically because of three barriers.
The three barriers are trust, acceptance, and volatility.
But PayPal is the biggest name yet who could fix two, maybe even three of those key things.
First, the trust factor. PayPal's a big company. It's legit, and Venmo is a trusted payment app.
And second, since PayPal handles crypto dollar conversions all the time, lots of retailers would be more comfortable accepting it.
And third, maybe third, with wider adoption and use thanks to PayPal, maybe Bitcoin's price fluctuations will chill out a little bit.
And that would mean PayPal has truly become Bitcoin's chaperone. Jack, can you whip up the takeaways for us before the weekend?
Quibi was too focused on Quibi.
Yeah.
It wasn't focused enough on the shows.
We think the idea was great. The execution wasn't.
Always, though, we want to give respect to the entrepreneurs who took a big bet on Quibi.
We're pumped they took a big risk.
For our second story, Goldman Sachs paid $5.3 billion for a fraudulent scheme in Malaysia.
What surprised us was that individual Goldman and Gold women were held responsible, too.
For our third and final story, PayPal is adding cryptocurrency, which could emphasize the currency of crypto in our society.
Honestly, Bitcoin, you need a chaperone. You really can't go out without a chaperone right now. Now, time for our snack fact of the day, tweeted in by Zach in lovely Nyack, New York.
Air conditioning was invented in 1902 by a man named Willis Carrier.
But Willis didn't invent this thing for comfort.
He invented it to control humidity to fix printing problems at his New York City paper factory.
Well, if anyone has worked at a New York City printing press factory, you know that the high heat and humidity causes the paper to change size and the ink to stay wet.
So Willis Carrier steps in instead of all these August smudges. He sets up an air conditioner machine, which prevented the paper from expanding and gave a consistent print.
Yeah, those are the worst, Jack. Then he went on to found Carrier Corp, which you may know for all their great air conditioners, which is worth $30 billion today.
Nick, that's Snacks Daily. I'm pumped for this weekend. Playing golf, going for a hike in southern New Hampshire with my buddy Kyle and HK.
I hear you. We're heading down to Half Moon Bay. Try not to fall over that cliff.
Snackers, thanks for snacking. If you got buddies this weekend who aren't snacking, you know what to do.
Ask them. Mattress, mattress, mattress.
We'll see you Monday.
If you know, you know. And before we go, Aaron and Magda, 1 year anniversary in Dallas, big congratulations.
Happy fourth birthday to Chase the dog in Philadelphia, who's a big snacker.
And congrats to snackers Thomas Hieronymus and Lucy Rushnova in San Rafael, California. Big engagement.
And happy birthday to Jordan Whites, a Yalie from Potomac, Maryland.
Big time snacker over at Jordan. And Acacia Lou, congrats. Melbourne, Australia, huge happy birthday.
And happy birthday to Raya Kator in Bangalore, India.
And Sidya Muhammad in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia.
And John Nakaway in Honolulu, Hawaii.
And Will Warren turned 51 in San Francisco.
And Beth Cork Henry in Morristown, New Jersey.
And Ryan Tejan in Provo, Utah.
And Dakota Brown in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania.
And Madi Gada in Dublin, California.
And Jacob Reynolds in Lee's Summit, Missouri. This is Jack. Nick owns one Bitcoin, whose name is Ben.
The Robin Hood Snacks podcast you just heard reflects the opinions of only the hosts, who are associated persons of Robin Hood Financial LLC, and does not reflect the views of Robin Hood Markets Inc. or any of its subsidiaries or affiliates. The podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended to serve as a recommendation to buy or sell any security and is not an offer or sale of a security. The podcast is also not a research report and is not intended to serve as the basis of any investment decision. Robinhood Financial, LLC, member FINRA, SIPC.
If you like The Best One Yet, you can listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
And before you go, tell us a little bit about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
We want to get to know you.
Nick and Jack here. Want to quickly tell you about the show Business Wars.
With the launch of ChatGPT, Sam Altman and OpenAI reinvigorated our imaginations and fears of a world with artificial intelligence. While the company looked like a stunning success from the outside, a battle was brewing within. Almost a year after launching ChatGPT, that battle erupted into a war when the company fired its charismatic CEO, Sam Altman.
From Wondery, Business Wars is a podcast about the biggest corporate rivalries of all time. And in the newest season, host David Brown digs into the philosophical differences within OpenAI that culminated in Sam Altman's shocking firing and what it means for the future and safety of AI in the modern world.
Follow Business Wars on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus. And for more deep dive and daily business content, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts.
With shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, The Best One Yet, Business Movers, and many more, Wondery means business.